Casting a line into the water is like asking a question. Something could be right underneath you, but you can't see it. It's there, but not there. Jeremy Wade. Hello, and welcome back to the Seek and Enjoy podcast. My name is Josh, and I'm here today with a special guest, Chris Perez. Chris, welcome.
Hi, glad to be here.
Hey, glad to have you, man. So on the podcast, we're going to talk about the dynamic between your daily 9-to-5 job and your hobbies and passions. So the first time I met Chris was when I was working for Academy Sports and Outdoors as a hunting and fishing associate. And I saw Chris in the aisle. He was looking at soft plastic worms. And so we just struck up conversation, just natural. And so Chris ended up inviting me to go fishing with him at some local spots, and I found out that he is an excellent teacher, and Chris can catch a fish just about anywhere. He seems to have a knack for catching big bass in some of the most remote locations. But of course, you know, before we get to talking about fishing, Chris, I understand that you have an interesting job.
Somewhat recently, within the past about two and a half years, August 2019, I started on with Amazon. I'm sure everyone knows Amazon or has bought something from them at some point in time.
Yeah, that's the stuff that shows up at my door all the time.
Yep. And I got hired on as a robotics technician, Tech One. Did that for 6 months. I got promoted to Tech 2, got off of night shift, and 6 months after that, I relocated as a Tech 3, and that's kind of where I'm at now. So I'm out in from Fort Worth, Texas, but I commute all the way to Farmers Branch in Carrollton.
So what are those levels of technicians? So you said you started as Tech 1 and like progressed on. Like, how does that progress?
So as a Tech 1, so we deal with... they're called Kiva drives. So there's a company that came out with robotic drives that Amazon decided to buy out, this company called Kiva. So the easiest way to describe what that is everyone knows what a Roomba is.
Right.
Cleans your floor. It's like an electronic robot that vacuums your carpet or your hard floors. It's a lot like an enlarged Roomba. It's got two wheel motors. It's got a camera in the front, a charge port in the back, and it's designed to kind of cut out the middleman as far as like picking products from like a warehouse. And these robots, we maintain them. So like anything that can go wrong with the robots, we maintain those. So like as a Tech 1, the Tech 1s are allowed to diagnose these robots. And then the Tech 2s, this is in a nutshell, but like the Tech 2s are going to be the ones that are allowed to replace parts on the robots.
Okay.
And the Tech 3s do a little more of the intricate stuff, like pushing firmware to some of the different parts and so on and so forth. But
so what is firmware? Is that like the software that goes into like programming where they go? And
yeah, yeah. So there's a central main unit that that's kind of where the Wi-Fi and everything connects to. It's how it like knows where it's going and everything on the AR floor. And so if that ever gets damaged or it ever gets in a, they can crash. They have like, there's accidents on the AR floor and they can crash and things like that. And yeah, so that'll be kind of what the Tech 3s do. They're going to deal with all the firmware as well as like replacing parts as well.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty intricate. You can get like way more detailed than I wish I had a video. I wish I could show you kind of what I do.
Yeah.
But it's pretty neat.
So what do those robots do? Like, they have jobs. So do they just like go and pull like packages or?
Yeah, so the layout of the AR floor is, we call it a pod farm. So like all the products, normally I guess if you were to go into a warehouse, you would see racks of product, boxes, you know, basically just like packages and stuff. Well, they've changed that to a rectangular, like on our floor, we have like 1,000 rectangle shaped pods. And these pods are going to have bins all the way around them. And at the bottom of the pod, there's going to be 4 feet or 4 legs. And the legs are roughly, I don't know, 8 to 10 inches high. So the drive unit, what it does is it'll drive underneath the pod, pick it up. It'll go to the pod field, pick it up, and then take it to an associate. So all the associates have to do is stand in one place, wait for the drive units to bring the pods to them, and they'll like spin around and make sure whatever product they need to pick out of it, like that you bought or whoever bought that day,
right,
is on the side they can get to. And then when it drives up to their station, they have a projector behind them, and the projector will shine down and it'll show them where your product is and where to pick it.
That's crazy.
So yeah, like they're kind of just replacing people with robots in a sense.
Yeah, so you don't have to like walk through just a big warehouse of stuff and try to find the product. They just bring the product to you.
Not at all. Yeah, and it speeds up the whole process. So the site I'm at is called an SSD site. So it's a same day is what that stands for. So the goal, and this like 2 years ago was a prototype site. Mm-hmm. So now they've like, and it started with I think 20 sites.
Oh,
15
wow.
or 20, yeah, like total, and it was a complete prototype. So like now that it's been around for 2 years, it's kind of picking up. They kind of know how it's going to flow and everything. And so now this year, 2 years later, they're projected to build 30 more of these sites. So having these like tiny sites, these are small. I came from what's called a fulfillment center. So the fulfillment centers have 4 floors of AR. So there's 4 floors of the pods that I was describing, and there's closer to like 2,000 per floor.
Wow.
My one single floor has like 400.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty different. But the idea is that from you clicking your order button on Amazon, they can have your product to you within like 4 to 5 hours.
Wow.
Yeah, that's the end goal. It's sub same day right now, so like that's still really quick. You order something, I mean, it probably tells you on your order, if you click right, by this time you'll have it today. So like that's the idea, is they want to spread these little sites everywhere, and then you'll have your product within a few hours.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we're lucky living in Fort Worth, because like a couple of times, like when I order things, if I order something on Amazon and I don't select like that 2-day shipping, whatever, sometimes I still get it within 2 days, because it's, I guess, because we've got fulfillment centers just booming up around here. It comes fast.
They're everywhere. There's one like 5 minutes from my house, actually right here off Camp Bowie now, that just popped up. Mm. And Amazon is the place never sleeps, that's for sure. So
they're cranking that out 24/7.
Oh yeah. We're off like the only days that place closes is Thanksgiving and Christmas.
Wow.
Yeah, and we have to be there every day. It's pretty crazy.
Gosh. Well, man, so is there anything that working on robots has taught you about just life in general?
I've always been a pretty patient person. I mean, this is it definitely takes some patience to deal with some of the issues, but at the same time, it's also a lot more fast paced.
Yeah.
So you gotta hit the ground running when you're on your shift and get things done. But I try to kind of put all that aside when I'm at home and kind of let loose and just relax.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the big reasons that I did bring you on today was to talk about fishing, because that's something that, again, we met and kind of our friendship started on fishing. And for me, that's something that I always think about, like if it's raining outside or if it's cold or whatever, I was like, you know what? Chris is probably out there catching fish today.
you could almost guarantee, if it's a Thursday, Friday, or Saturday, and you're at work, I'm out somewhere on some body of water.
No, for me, like if I wake up and it's raining outside, I'm like, yeah, I'm not going fishing. This isn't happening today.
Yeah, and I'm the complete opposite. I go out. I'm like the postman. Rain, snow, sunshine, clouds.
Right. Well, I mean, with Amazon, you are the postman now, right?
Yeah, kind of, sort of, yeah.
Gosh.
I make sure your stuff gets to you, that's for sure.
So with all those days that you're fishing, like how does your wife feel about that? Like if you're not home? Like,
so I guess I'm fortunate enough to where a lot of our work days kind of correspond with me going out and fishing. I kind of work my schedule around her schedule. So I'll ask her, you know, it's always changing. So I always ask her, so are you working all week this week? And she's usually working all week. So if she is, I can usually anticipate going out at least a Thursday and a Friday and like keeping Saturday free for family stuff. But that's kind of how that aspect of it works.
Yeah, I mean that's a lot of balance too with your work life and your hobby life. You get to do that in time that's not cutting into like family time.
Yeah, definitely. She, Lacey, my wife, is completely supportive of it. She's actually a fisherman herself. You know, we actually, our first date, we went kayak fishing, and at the 183 bridge, that was where I took her, and I took her to the Mary's Creek Clear Fork Split. You've probably been back there.
Yep.
Yeah, so that was our first real date slash like adventure we went on with each other. And shortly after that, she actually hit the river with me like super early in the morning. We fished the Trinity. So she's kind of gotten into other things now. You know, she's out doing softball practice now. But yeah, I would say she's like completely supportive of everything I do.
Yeah, that's great. You know, my wife Sarah, she's told me lots of times, you know, like, yeah, I'll go fishing with you, but I'm not getting up early for that.
It's not an easy thing to do. And like Lacey at the time was bartending, so like she was working super late. I mean, like 2 in the morning, and I was like, well, you know, if you want to get up early and go, you know, I didn't think about that at the time, so I was just like, if you want to get up early and go fishing, she's like, oh yeah, I just need a couple hours of sleep. And literally, she slept like maybe 3 or 4 hours, and then got up and got all geared up and went out
Oh
with
my
me on the
gosh.
water, like fully committed. Yeah, and she caught a lot of fish. She's out fished me on the river.
Wow.
She's won tournaments.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there anything that she's taught you that you didn't know about fishing before?
She's taught me that when she goes with me, I can just expect her to do better than I do. It happens regularly. She doesn't go very often. When she does, she generally shows me out.
Maybe that's why she doesn't go, because she's just like, well, catching fish is easy. Why would I do that?
Yeah, you're probably right.
Meanwhile, we have to work at it.
I work so hard at it too.
To take it back though, like we were going to talk about fishing, but before you ever got into fishing, you told me that like one of your first hobbies was catching reptiles in nature. How did you get into that?
Yeah, so growing up, one of my first best friends ever, he lived in Crowley, kind of by, I don't know if you've ever been to Bicentennial Park.
Oh yeah.
So he lived in the neighborhood just a block away from Bicentennial. So like we would run around Bicentennial Park as kids, walk down to the park, play in the creek, and he was the best friend I ever had, and he could catch anything. Like this dude could catch, he would catch, and he would just catch him and let him go. But all of that kind of rubbed off on me, and I ended up kind of doing the same thing. I would catch green anoles. I would catch house geckos, spiny Texas spinies. I've had multiple kinds of snakes, ribbon snakes. I don't know if you've ever heard of a six-line race runner.
No.
They're pretty cool. They're native to this area as well.
Are those like the green ones?
Yeah, they kind of have an iridescent green. They got a real long, like kind of pointy tail.
I know those, yeah.
They would run around Bicentennial as well, but we caught one of those. I had one of those for a long time, literally to the point to where like my mom did not care whatsoever that I caught reptiles or that I had them. And I mean, I think I probably had like 7 or 8 cages wrapped around my room as a kid. And I would eventually let them all go, but I would keep them for a while and then release them back into the yard or wherever I caught them. But yeah, I mean, like as a kid, I would run the neighborhoods just exploring, catching critters, snakes, reptiles. That's definitely one of my better pastimes was digging in water meters and catching scorpions. Like we would catch a little bit of everything.
Oh
Like,
gosh.
yeah, it was a lot of fun. Like still to this day, I'll catch a wild snake here or there, whatever.
Yeah. Like I mean, probably most people, including myself, are thinking, well, do you ever get bit? Like, do those things ever sting you? Like, how does that?
I've definitely, yeah. Okay, so when we met at Academy, right? Well, I worked at the Petco. I don't know if you even knew that.
Yeah, yep.
So, yeah, I worked at Petco right around the corner on Overton Ridge. And so I was constantly dealing with reptiles there as well. So reptiles, rats, mice, all kinds of stuff. So, like, kind of a side story on top of that. So I did deal with like the Petco animals, but one of my ex-girlfriends got the opportunity to run, I don't know if you remember this, but on Hewland, you know where Half Price Books is?
Uh-huh.
There used to be, right next door, there was a store that used to be called the Reptile Den.
It was like right next to the comic book shop?
Right next to it, yeah.
Yep.
So she was friends with Julie and Jaren were their names, and they decided they wanted to open this reptile store, and I guess they met my ex at Petco and really liked her, and they were like, here's a list of vendors. We need to fill this place. We have 200 cages. Go nuts.
Wow.
She was like, here's our bank account. Just order whatever you want. So this kind of goes to getting bit, because I did get bit once, and it was like kind of freaked me out. But we ordered, and I kind of got to help out with this a little bit. So, like, we ordered some crazy stuff. We ordered a Goliath bird-eating tarantula.
What?
We ordered a frilled dragon. We ordered blood pythons, like Amazon tree boas. Like, we ordered all kinds of crazy stuff. Like, stuff that, like, you see in the zoos, but you can't actually, like, pick up and hold.
That's, like, exotic stuff?
Absolutely. And that's what they wanted. They wanted stuff that, like, you can't get anywhere else. And they wanted to draw people in with this crazy stuff. So, yeah, we ordered all kinds of stuff, dude. The tarantula, for instance, the bird-eating tarantula, it came in when they shipped it. It came in a 5-gallon bucket, and this thing could touch every edge of the bucket with its feet. Like, it was no, I'm not even kidding, it was like 12 inches long. Like,
that's a big huge spider.
It was freaky. I didn't mess with that. That thing stayed in the cage, but we had salamanders, gosh. I mean, poison dart frogs. But, okay, the time I got bit. So, I got out an Amazon tree python, and it was kind of a burgundy color.
Uh-huh.
And I got him out, and, like, they're super long. The thing was, like, probably as long as this table. It was probably, like, 5 feet or mm-hmm. so. But they're real skinny. And, like, I got him out, and he was kind of coiled around my arm. And I don't know what I touched. I'm sure I touched something. Maybe a rodent cage or who knows. Like, but it's coiled around my wrist like a bracelet. And then it kind of like puts its nose up to my forearm. And then it just like latches on.
Oh.
It's like, I'm looking at it and I'm like, don't freak out. Don't freak out. And it just like latches on and then lets go. But like, it's wrapped around my wrist, but it's probably hanging off my wrist by a solid, like, foot and a half.
Gosh.
So, like, it easily could have turned around and, like, bit my face. So, I'm like, okay, let's just put it back in the cage.
Wow. So,
that's one time I got bit, and it was kind of unexpected.
I'm totally not a snake person, but my buddy Cameron, he used to have a couple of snakes. He had, I think one of them was like a 5-foot albino ball python.
That's cool.
And she had one eye. So she was really? Like, I don't want to say she was mean. She was kind of like cautious of people. Just, I'm not really sure about you. So like, he could never bring her out to like let anyone handle her. But every once in a while, he would call me over there to his house. He says, hey, dude, her name was Navi.
Okay.
Like, dude, I got to clean out Navi's cage. I need you to be the lid guy. I was like, what do you mean be the lid guy? He's like, look, so I've got this box we're going to put the snake in. And I put the snake in. All you got to do is put the lid on. It's not that hard. And I'm like, oh, dude.
It's not that hard. Just
Yeah. He's like, no. I've got the hard part here. You know, because he would, you know, use a little like metal stick and kind of put it under her. And,
right.
You know, gently lift her up. And then with his other hand, he would grab her by the tail and just pick her up. And he set her right in the box, and then it was all up to me. And it's like one time she looked at me, and I was like, oh, this is it. I'm about to be bit by a snake. But
and those are quite a bit bigger.
Oh, yeah. But, yeah, he had, I think, at some point, he had, I think, 5 or 6 other, I guess he went to, like, the Dallas Reptile Show or something, and ended up buying some like ball python morphs. So like, you know, they've got like the different colors, I think.
Oh, they've gone nuts with the morphs.
Man, morphs are crazy. So like, I didn't know anything about it until he showed it to me, but I think he picked up one that was called a piebald.
Yeah.
So like on one side of it, he's got like the regular kind of like you're saying burgundy and kind of like a darker brown stripes. And then at some point, he's just like completely white on all of his scales, and up until you get to the head, and then it's back to like regular colors. But
yeah, they're pretty wicked. I had a bunch of snakes too. I had like a 40 gallon full of, I think I had like 4 or 5 ball pythons. What other kind of snakes did I have? I think that was really it, other than corn snakes and just little stuff. But one of my roommates in the second house I lived in, he acquired a albino Burmese. And I say acquired because it was in like it was in a cage about the size of this table that was like homemade plexiglass, holes drilled in it. And,
wow.
Yeah, and stuff like that. But it was probably, I think it was like 7 or 8 feet when he got it.
Oh.
When he acquired it. Well, he was feeding it regularly. Like when they get that size, snakes really only have to eat like once every 3 or 4 weeks, about once a month.
But they eat something big at that point, right?
Yeah, he was feeding it. So we, working at Petco, we sold small, medium, and large rats. Mm-hmm. There's like all another whole other category of rats called colossal.
Jeez.
So he would feed it colossal rats. He would feed it like one colossal rat a week. And then once a month, he would feed it a frozen rabbit.
Wow.
So you can buy those. Like, they do sell frozen rabbits, and he would thaw out a frozen rabbit and feed it one of those once a month. And this thing, while he lived with me, I think it grew like 2 feet in like a year. So it was like 10 feet. And like, it would it would fit in the cage, but it couldn't move. Like, it was coiled up. And the same thing, like, it had like a little, almost like a bathroom lock.
Yeah.
And it hinged open, the lid open from the top. So you had to reach in to get the snake out. And he would reach in and just kind of slap it and get it used to the like touch,
yeah,
before he scooped it out so that he didn't get bit. And it would hiss and puff up, and he would just scoop it out. And we'd take it to the front yard, and he'd let it stretch out and slither around in the front yard. And people would drive by completely freaked out, like, what is in their front yard?
Yeah, no kidding. Like, look at that.
Yeah, he never got bit, though. I mean, yeah, that was the biggest snake I think I've ever handled.
I want to say that's really lucky, but I guess I feel like you see videos of guys like somewhere overseas, like handling these giant pythons, and they don't care. They just like kick them or pick them up and stuff. And
yeah,
it's like, I wonder if it's something like after a snake gets so big, it's like, you're not even worth my time anymore. I don't know.
Could be. Yeah. Or they're just like, they have enough interaction with them that the snake's just docile. Like they are captive animals. You know, people, if they raised them from an egg, then sometimes they're just not as aggressive.
That's nuts.
Yeah, it is kind of crazy, though, because the one he had was not the happiest when you'd start to mess with it, but it would let you pick him up and get him out.
Gosh.
Pretty crazy.
So back into fishing, I mean, kind of transitioning from snakes to fishing. You know, I've fished with you a few times at the Trinity River here in Fort Worth, kind of on the east side, and I just remember seeing like tons and tons of water moccasins. I know you've definitely seen them. Like, have you ever had any close calls with something venomous like that?
So the only time, man, this is crazy because I fish the Trinity all the time. Like all the time. Like that is like what I grew up fishing was the Trinity. Well, like I say, like grew up, but like high school on. Out of high school, I fished the Trinity quite a bit before I started fishing lakes and like bigger bodies of water. But, I mean, I've paddled every inch of the Trinity from the Benbrook Dam all the way to almost Dallas.
Wow.
So like Beach Street, you know, kind of like North Fort Worth kind of area.
Right.
And I have seen water moccasins one time ever. What's weird, though, is it was in the Trinity. It was near Rockwood Park, so kind of near University, where University crosses the river. And, I was paddling just some backwaters where there's really no walkways or anything. It's just a lot of riprap, which is like broken up rock on the river. And I was paddling kind of out from the riprap, and I saw 3 little snakes on a rock. They're pitch black, totally black snakes, and I was almost certain they were water moccasins. It was the only time I think I'd ever actually seen one. And as soon as I get past them, they all three get in the water and start swimming towards me.
Oh, man.
Yeah, like, and they weren't big. Like, granted, they were only, like, maybe 15, 16 inches long.
Yeah.
But they, like, totally came at me. And I remember as a kid, I was fishing at night behind a cabin. I don't remember what lake it was, but I was with my dad. And some snakes came straight up out of the water and, like, came at us. It's the only time I've ever had that happen. And I've paddled right up to giant diamondback water snakes, and they just sit on branches. Like, they don't try to chase you down. But these did. That one time with my dad, we got chased by snakes, and then that one time on the river, and I'm pretty certain both of those were water moccasin incidents.
Wow. I saw them one time on the Trinity, and it's funny because I had, like, a double encounter. So I was one of my old coworkers from Academy, Brandon, he was a cool guy from, I think he was from Missouri or Mississippi. I always forget. But so I told Brandon, I was like, man, you know, I'm really interested in going bow fishing. You know, take the bow and arrow with the string on it and that'd shoot a fish and try to reel it in.
I've never done that.
So I've heard a lot of people say that there's like carp and gar in the Trinity River and that they like to go bow fishing there. And so here I am, like, go right off of like 183, right behind those apartments there on Bel Air, TCU neighborhood. So I'm like walking around with like a bow and arrow
down the river,
like on the sidewalk. And there's like, you know, like soccer moms, like, you know, pushing baby strollers and stuff.
Heavily hiked areas. Like,
yeah. And they just see two guys with bows and arrows going down on the Trinity River. And so I'm just in there practicing. Like, if I see a fish, I'm going to try to shoot at it.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
And, you know, of course, the only legal game fish are really carp, but I mean, of course, at that time I didn't know any better. I was just like, I'm just going to try to shoot anything. I'm not going to hit anything anyways. I just kind of went in that mindset because, you know, like the whole thing with the bow fishing is that, like, the water and the, like, the 45, what is it, the 45 degree angle?
Yeah, because you have, like, kind of like a, like, it magnifies a little bit. Yeah.
But so I saw a snake in there, and I was like, oh, I'm just going to try to shoot at it and just see what happens. And so I shot at it, and he started coming at me, and I was like, oh no. Oh, my bad.
Oh, no.
I'm out of here. Yeah, so, like,
snake's not an easy target either, like, no, by any means.
No. I don't know what I thought. I thought it was like, what's that guy that shot an apple off his son's head?
Yeah.
I guess I thought I was good with the bow and arrow. I wasn't like that, but... So that same day, we're walking laid down like the bank later on. We get to this like tall patch of grass, probably like 3.5-4 feet of grass, and I walk up on a family of possums.
Really?
Like, yeah, it was like a mama possum and like a bunch of baby possums, and this little baby possum just hissed at me, and I was like, oh no. And so of course, you know, I tagged it with my bow and arrow. I was like,
nice.
Yep.
It got one.
And then I was like, what do I do with this?
I promise you, if you throw it in the river, something will eat it. Do you remember what section of the river you were hiking in?
Yeah, I mean, it was probably from...
like Hugh and Brian Irvin somewhere?
So, like, right at those apartments by Bel Air and 183, where that meets.
Yeah.
So we walked that as far as our legs could carry us, just like all the way across, right, like past like the, I guess there was like a golf course there.
Oh, y'all walked all the way down to like almost University.
Yeah.
Yeah, y'all walked downstream.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
So y'all walked through the section that's between Brian Irvin and Hewlin.
Mm-hmm.
So like there's a waterfall. You probably remember walking across that,
mm-hmm,
that solid rock.
It
turns into like a little waterfall.
Yeah.
Like about 3/4 of the way down before you get to the next shallow flat, I was walking that area one time by myself. I was down there fishing, and I saw the second biggest snapping turtle I've ever seen in person.
Oh, man.
And I'm not even kidding. It was like not quite as wide as this table, but it was every bit of probably like 30 inches wide.
Dang.
It was a huge big
turtle. That's got to be an old dude.
Old. I mean, it was probably 100 something years old. Like, it was giant, and the water was like kind of that dingy, like after it rains.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just under the surface, and I could kind of see the silhouette, and I was like, oh my god. And I looked around by myself down there, and you know, there's like a huge hill, so there's like really no one around, but I like looked up to see if there was like anyone around that else that could see it, and there was nobody. But
of course.
Yeah, the biggest, like, yeah, after seeing that and then just knowing like how strong they are and what they can bite through, like, I don't spend too much time like in the actual river anymore. You know how it's all like they got the swim beach at Panther Island and all that crazy stuff now. Dude, I don't get in that.
Oh yeah, they're like, come come party with us over here. Like we know this is the Trinity River, it's right?
In the stagnant river and swim with alligator snapping turtles. Yeah, no, I'm good.
How would you like a $9 beer?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Oh gosh. Man, that's wild.
Yeah, the Trinity. I've spent a lot of time fishing that body of water.
Kind of to tie together fishing and robots, I did want to tell you another story. A friend of mine, Cameron, he went shark fishing recently down on the Texas coast, down by Freeport. And he was telling me, I guess, like, nowadays, like, you know, they used to just, to put out your shark bait, somebody would hop in the kayak with all the bait and the chum and all that, and they would paddle out and they would drop the bait. Apparently now they use drones, or I guess some guys use drones out there.
I have seen people do that, yeah.
That is so cool.
Drones and like potato gun launcher type stuff.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Man. Yeah, I guess like there's a stick or something that releases the bait once you like, I guess you open the bail and they send it out so far, and as soon as it gets to the end, you flip your bail over and it just...
The line pops off.
The line pops off of it. Mm-hmm.
I have seen people do that. I've even seen people, like you said, they take the line out and they can see visually what the drone sees, and they can like find the shark.
Wow.
Yeah, they'll like see the shark and they'll drop the baits like right on them. I've seen people do that.
Wow.
Yeah. Not in person, but I've seen it done. And yeah, I have some buddies that would paddle baits out. They go down to like... what is it, like Corpus area, and they'll do some redfish fishing, and sometimes they'll catch the occasional shark as well, but they kayak their lines out. They're not as classy. They don't have the drones.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I just don't, I think about like, cause I have the sit on top kayak, and so like, I just think about like, what if I spill the chum in the bottom of the boat, and then you got like the blood trail going out.
Yeah, they're hunting you down.
Yeah, they can smell it.
It's a very real scenario.
Yeah, that could happen. I don't know if I want to take that kind of chance, but but with robots, anything is possible. You can send it out there.
That's very true. One of the techs I used to work with, I was a tech one when I started, right? And my tech three, his name was Nitesh, and he built drones. Like that was his hobby. That's like what he did outside of working, is he would build drones. He ended up leaving Amazon shortly after I think I left his facility, and I kind of lost touch with him, but that always interested me. I always wanted to see like what kind of drones he builds. I didn't know if they were like the racing drones or what, but yeah, he was totally into all that stuff.
One of my coworkers' sons is into those racing drones like you're talking about, and she said that he got a VR headset.
That's
and
awesome.
So like, you're racing, but it's like you're experiencing it as you go, like through the goggles or whatever.
That's got to be a learning curve.
I think that'd be so disorienting.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like I would probably be like one of those guys that like, as you're turning the drone, you lean one way or another. Yeah. I lean to the right or the left to try to make my drone go that way.
Yeah, I've never even done VR like video games. I've never even experienced that. So like trying to fly a drone would be like, not easy for me to take on.
Oh yeah, there's a lot of games out there like now for that VR stuff. I think there's like zombie games, which that would be absolutely terrifying. Fun though.
I see tons of videos of people like breaking their televisions and everything else trying to,
well, just like when the Wii came out, you know, people like would break their TVs, throw in the those little hand things that are supposed to go around your wrist.
Yeah, exactly.
Gosh. So, Chris, on to fishing. This is one that we could talk about probably forever. Just so much behind it. Chris, you mostly do bass fishing. But, I mean, I'm sure you've caught a lot of fish, not even trying. I mean, just trying to catch bass, you've caught tons of fish.
Oh, yeah. Everything will bite a bass bait. I've caught giant flatheads out of the Trinity. I've caught a really big black drum out of the Trinity, crappie. I mean, a little bit of everything. My last job, I I traveled a lot, so I remodeled Kroger stores. Mm-hmm. So we build new marketplace style Krogers, and we travel a lot. And I had I just tried to make the best out of the opportunity of moving around. So I would take my kayak with me and fish. And we went down to Orange, and that's right by the Sabine River. Right by this. I mean, the Sabine has like a main boat ramp that they've held like giant tournaments and stuff like that at. So like, we were like 5 minutes from the boat ramp where we were working. So I took the kayak with me, loaded it up, and I would go fish the Sabine. And the Sabine is brackish water.
Oh, nice.
So it's got everything. Like, it flows right down from the coast. So you've got largemouth bass. I literally went out from the boat ramp, paddled right over, like, I'm talking like 30 yards from the boat ramp. There was a barge. I fished that barge, and I caught, I caught sand trout. I caught speckled trout and a gaff top catfish, like, all in one spot.
Wow.
I crossed the river, went into like a little canal that had like a current coming out of it. I caught a flounder, a redfish, and then I paddled back past the boat ramp and fished a dock and caught a largemouth bass.
Wow.
All in one day. Yeah.
All in the same insane. Little,
yeah. I mean, it's, yeah. All in the same bait.
Wow.
Yeah, I never even had to switch my bait.
That's nuts.
Yeah, it was very cool. But yeah, I mean, that just, yeah, you catch a little bit of everything when you bass fish. I didn't really know what I was fishing for, because I was like, I know it's brackish water. I know there's probably saltwater fish in here, but
yeah,
I didn't really know what to expect. And
so, what I have to ask you, what's the lure that catches all that?
So this, like, has been a lure I've been stuck on since I first read an article about it. And it's called the Ned Rig. And it is the dumbest rig, fishing lure, like, probably on the planet.
Okay.
Have you ever fished with a Cinco or a stick bait? It's just...
Yep.
It's like a 6-inch, 5-inch, just a plastic that looks like a stick. There's nothing to it. Like, no life, no legs, no appendages, nothing. Well, it's a downsized version of that. It's basically one of those cut in half. It's like a 3-inch stick bait on a little, they call it a mushroom head. So it's like a little jig head mm-hmm. that stands up. So it makes the bait stand perfectly straight up. Just a stick standing up. That's all it is.
That's it?
There's no trailer or anything? The hook is tiny. There's nothing else to it. It is the simplest bait. But you can make it look like a little, when you work it on the bottom, it looks like a little bait fish. Mm-hmm. You can just kind of hop it on the bottom. It looks like a little just bait fish feeding on the bottom. Everything under the sun eats it. I mean, it's still, to this day, I throw it every day. If I can't catch them on anything else, I will try that or some version of that, and I will catch fish on it.
That's crazy. You know, it makes me wonder, like, how did they come up with that? Like, maybe it's just like, okay, well, I've got half of a worm left in my tackle bag, and I've got this jig head, just okay, this is what I'm doing now.
Yeah, that, so this was like, I can't remember the angler's name, but this was like a challenge. They challenged this one guy to catch X amount of fish in a day. I don't remember what it was, like 20 or 30, and that's what he came up with. It was literally like he cut a Cinco in half, put it on a jig head, and he hit the numbers they were trying to get him to catch. And then it turned into a northern bait. Like, that was a northern technique. It's called the Ned Rig. And now Z-Man, I don't know if you remember probably that brand, Z-Man.
Yep, Z-Man lures. They make the chatterbaits.
They invented the chatterbait. So now they created their own plastic, and they make the TRD, which literally stands for turd, because that's what the bait looks like. It looks like a little turd stick bait. And that bait catches everything. Like, they make the best one. Like, I have like packs and packs of them. It's pretty funny.
That's amazing. You know, part of me wants to believe that there's so much of a science to it, and then the other part of me wants to believe that fish will bite on just about anything if you hit at the right time of day. I remember, like, when I worked at Academy, I don't know if you remember Gary Biddy. He was like kind of the old guy that worked there. He was a Vietnam vet. He was super cool, and he was like the king of fishing at the store. Like, he knew more about fishing because he'd done it
for so many years.
And more than anybody else. But Gary used to always tell me, because I'd be looking at lures and like, oh man, I saw some guy buying a bunch of these. He told me they were good, you know. And that's what I used to do. Was I used to get all my advice from people in the fishing aisles, because I didn't know anything about it. I was like, I just work here. Like, I think this would be cool to learn and get to do. But Gary used to tell me, he said, fishing lures are meant to catch fishermen, and as more than they are meant to catch fish.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And like, so recently I've gotten into throwing bigger baits. Like, so my new goal is to catch a 10 pound. That's like every bass fisherman's goal in life is to catch a 10 plus pound fish before the day they die.
Right.
So like I've set out on this like journey and mission to catch a 10 pounder. And part of that, before I get off topic, is I started fishing big baits, big yep. swim baits. And there's like a whole community. It's almost like a cult following swim bait fishing.
Wow.
And I'm not even kidding. Like, these baits get up into like the close $1,000 range.
Whoa, just for one bait?
Kidding, for one bait. Yeah, there's a bait called a Roman Mother. It's a wooden, handmade bait, and they go for like $500 to $800.
Can you imagine getting that stuck on a stump?
At yeah, I mean, no one, like, it's a bait every swim bait fisherman wants, but, like, are you really ever going to throw that? Like, exactly what you said, it catches the angler, not the fish. Fish will eat anything.
Yeah.
Like, literally, I've watched videos of people catching bass on fucking lettuce and iPhones. Like,
yeah,
it doesn't make any sense.
Dude, I'll never forget the time that I was getting really into fishing, and I was like, okay, you know, I work at Academy. They give me a small employee discount. I'm going to buy myself a nice fishing pole, and I'm going to go down to the Trinity and try to catch some fish. And so I think it was the time, like, the sand bass were running up there kind of by 377, and I was like, oh, yeah, this is a great time of year to go do it. And so as we're walking down, I see a couple of guys walking up, and they've got stringers full of sandies,
nice.
The sand bass. They're supposed to be really good eating. And so these guys are walking back with fish, and I'm like, oh, man, they're doing great. This is going to be a good day. And so I was like, well, maybe I just need to walk a little further than they walked. You know, maybe there won't be, maybe they caught the fish that were closer to the parking
yeah,
lot.
Yeah, definitely. They're always another hole further down that they're in.
But so we walked down there, and here I am with my brand new fishing pole and you know, put some lures on, and I'm trying to catch him, and I'm not catching nothing. I'm just having a bad day. And I look over to the left of me, not far down up the bank from us, there was a young man, and he's got a water bottle with about, I don't know, 5 feet of fishing line wrapped around it and a package of hot dogs.
I see where this is going.
And he is catching the hell out of him. Yeah. And I'm just like, dude, you know, it's, I don't think it's always the gear. I mean, the gear helps. It absolutely does. And we could talk, I mean, that's another thing. We could talk gear all day long, and I would love to
absolutely.
Do it. But I mean, it's also
sometimes knowledge outbeats or outcatches the gear. Like, it's mm-hmm. it's all about like knowing where they're at or figuring them out. I mean, it's just a piece to the puzzle.
Yeah.
And some people figure it out without all the crazy fancy stuff.
Yeah. So is that what draws you into fishing? Is that puzzle?
Absolutely, man. It's just always, it's always changing. I mean, I went out this afternoon. I went out this morning and fished the LBJ grasslands before I came in and did this.
So, wow.
Yeah, that's catch why anything? I'm all sunburned and stuff. So LBJ, the grasslands, there's like, I want to say like 6 or 7 public lakes out there. They're mm-hmm. all like super small bodies of water. And I hit 3 different ones before I caught anything.
Wow.
The first one that always fishes good that I went to, I got one bite on a drop shot, and that was it. And I left. I gave it 2 hours. I went to another one that was close by. I didn't even get bitten. No, I'm sorry. Take that back. I lost one. I got one bite, and I lost one that was probably about 4 pounds. And the third one I went to was a little bit dingier and dirty. I ended up catching 7. The wow. worst looking body of water out of all of them was the one I caught the fish off. And so 7 total, and then I lost my biggest one at that one that was probably close to 5 pounds.
Wow.
Yeah. It's all documented. I got it on video.
Heck
yeah.
My
fish misses. You got to record those too. So.
Yeah. Yeah, so speaking of documentation, Chris, you, I'm just going to go ahead and shout you out here. So Chris has got an Instagram channel right now. It is CinnamonCrunchDust84. And so on there, you kind of have, is it a GoPro that you have like strapped to your chest where you just kind of, you know, paddle around and you're fishing and just, it's really just documentation of your day. Like, you're just hanging out and fishing.
Yeah. So the GoPro, I kind of hung up on the shelf for a long time and just kind of forgot about it. Like, I don't know why. I just kind of gave up on it. I got a new phone. I kind of like, so, because kind of goes back to the LBJ grassland. So I was out at LBJ. I recently discovered TikTok and like what TikTok's all about, and like kind of get lost in it, just like any social media or anything like that. And I caught a really big fish at one of the lakes out there. It was about 7.5.
Wow.
And it was like my third cast. And just happened to be, there were two kids out there as well. And one of them had a GoPro chesty mounted up. And he saw me catch the fish. And he saw me paddle directly back to the boat ramp to take a picture of it.
Yep.
And he followed me over there. Dude's name was Nat. And he has actually got a pretty big following on TikTok. And I never really thought about doing TikTok fishing videos.
Yeah.
I just get lost in other people's stuff. Like, I just look at whatever content's going on there. But I was like, well, you're on TikTok, huh? You do TikTok videos. I was like, cool. So I fished with the dude like a couple days later, and then I kind of went his path and started a little TikTok video, you know, started doing some of that stuff. And that's kind of starting to progress into maybe like video recording and a little bit of GoPro footage, and we'll see what happens. We'll see how it goes from there. But the equipment side of it is kind of holding me back right now as far as like video editing and stuff like that. So you will see a little more of the video footage now on Instagram as well as my TikTok, which is Insomniacs. So yeah, you can follow me on there and see some big fish catches and some of my day-to-day stuff.
Yep, and Insomniacs, that's spelled like kayak. So Insomni, Y-A-K-S.
Y-A-K-S, yep.
Cool. Yeah, I've seen that in, I saw on actually on your Instagram and one of your TikTok videos when you were out there, is Wheeler Branch?
Wheeler Branch and Glen Rose.
Uh-huh. And actually, tell me about that lake real quick. Is that the one that's on the power plant?
So there's the power plant lake is going to be Squaw Creek.
Okay.
This one is much smaller. It's actually Somerville's water supply.
Oh, okay.
So I want to say they've impounded the lake maybe 7-8 years ago. Maybe, I don't quote me on that, but maybe let's just say in the ballpark of 10 years ago. Well, they decided that lake is going to be the town's water supply. So when they first opened the lake, they were charging an ungodly amount to get out on it. It was $25 to get out on that lake and fish it.
Just on a kayak?
On anything. Like, just to go out there and walk around was $25.
Wow.
Yeah, but at the time, they would let big boats go out there. You could put a bass boat out there. You could put a kayak, whatever you wanted. I guess shortly after, they started realizing that some of the gasoline and stuff was getting into their water supply. So they decided to change the rules up a little bit. They lowered their prices. So now non-residents can get into the park for $10 a day. And the residents, I think, is either free or like half that.
Nice.
Something like that. But it is amazing body of water. It's, I'm guessing, like an old rock quarry.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say all the land out there is mostly clay and rock. So, like, even when it rains, that place stays nearly crystal clear.
Wow.
Yeah, it's so clear that they actually do diving lessons and stuff out there.
So that's a big deal for us because, like, all the other lakes that are around here are like what they call stained or like,
oh yeah, very
really
much, yeah,
dark green water,
very dirty. Benbrook, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
They all get really dirty when it rains or the wind picks up. All the lakes around here get really dirty. That's the cleanest, clearest lake probably within 50 miles of here.
Wow. So before that, if you had to go somewhere, I mean, that was a long ways just to get some clear water.
Yeah, Glen Rose is about an hour from my driveway.
What's the other clear water lake that's nearby here? Is it
the next closest one to here? So there's actually a lake out in Decatur, out in the grasslands, called Clear Lake.
Oh, okay.
And it is pretty clear. I was out there today. That was the first place I tried this morning. That wasn't very good. But you also have a East Texas lake called Lake Athens.
Yep.
It's another one of my favorites.
Okay.
And it's generally really clear because it's loaded with vegetation and grass. But I was just there Memorial weekend, and it's pretty dirty. It's just this time of year, we're getting so much rain and everything's so flooded that...
Oh, yeah. We've had a ton of rain.
All the lakes are like super, super stained right now.
Wow. So what's your favorite lake that you've ever been to?
My favorite lake. So...
I mean, don't say Echo Lake.
Yeah, I know. Echo. It's got some big ones, but it is... I've watched just decomposing dogs, and that lake is baby definitely diapers. Yeah.
So Echo Lake, for anybody who's not familiar, is there's a small community lake across I-35 from La Grande Plaza.
Ripley Street.
Yep. Yeah. There's some big fish in there, but it's also like, I don't know, it's kind of dirty. It's water,
like the epitome of Fort Worth. Like it's there's a lot of riffraff and a lot of crazy, just like, you can't go out there and not see gunshots and like burnouts and like it's wow. Just the craziest stuff goes on out there. It's kind of sad that the park turned into that, but the fish don't know that. They don't have anywhere to go. They're stuck in there, so it's still like really fun to fish.
Yeah, they're thriving. I mean, so the first time I ever fished there, actually, it was with you. You're like, hey, you know, let's go kayak out here, and I was like, okay. Actually, no, it was before I even had kayaks.
Yeah, that was from the bank.
So yeah, the biggest fish I've ever caught in my life, I caught out of that lake, and Chris was there with me. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, that was a good day. I think we were throwing jigs. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I want to say it's probably that same year, that spawn. I think that year was when I really learned how to throw a jig, and I was like, you got to try it. Ty went on.
Man, I'll tell you, just from that summer alone, and from now on, I mean, I will always use a jig.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's one thing I love about you, Chris, is that you're so patient and able to teach people. And interested in teaching people, like, you know, some bass fishermen get really stuck into the, well, this is my secret bait and my secret spot or whatever. And like, you, like, usually if I ask you, hey, where'd you catch that fish? When'd you use it on? You're like, you know, like, you'll tell me, but you also know darn well that I could go back to that same spot with that same lure.
You're exactly right.
And things will be different.
Yeah. There is no real secrets. You know, people kind of get caught up in that aspect of things, and I'm kind of the opposite, because that is very, very much the truth. Like, I could tell you exactly where I went, exactly what I used, but that fish is long gone.
Yeah.
You know, there might be some resident fish there, but that's pretty unlikely that you're going to go back and catch the same fish.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, that kind of spins off onto the whole, like, documenting what I do, because I go out, I spend a lot of my time exploring. That's, like, kind of my favorite thing to do. I like to go to new bodies of water, just explore what's out there, and, I figure if I'm spending my time, that much of my time by myself doing it, why not share some of that with the public?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that when you're ready and you want to get after it, doing some of that tutorial stuff, I think that people are going to start catching more fish. It's so hard not to learn from you and benefit from it. I know, like I said, I mean, just for the jig thing alone, like I learned so much, but I think Chris is really good at just from the experiences that you've had, you know, showing this is what I did and this is how I did it. And there's a million ways to do it. There's the phrase is, you know, there's more than one way to skin a cat. And I think that's the same thing with fishing. You can do that. You can do the exact same thing that we're doing or that Chris is doing and have different results. But for whatever reason, I believe that that your methods are pretty sound. Like you've done a lot of experimenting. I mean, if we could put a clock on how many hours you fished, I think is more than most people.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I had a conversation with one of my buddies, and they were talking about, like, how many days a year they fished, and he threw some crazy number out there. Like, oh, I got to fish, like, 200 days. That's a lot of days out of a year.
That's a lot of fishing.
Yeah, and I started thinking about it, and I was like, well, I fish at least 1 to 2 days a week.
Yeah.
On a good week. Sometimes I can fish 1 to 4 days a week, you know, if I fish the day I get off and then all my weekend days. But yeah, it's definitely up there. The numbers.
Man. And those numbers aren't always catching. That's time spent fishing. That's not even just actually catching.
And
fish.
Then today was one of those days, like it's starting to get hot. It was like 91 degrees or something today, and it's That one, like, Wheeler branch, it's really treated me well the past probably like 5 or 6 weeks. I've done really well out there. And I think it's just been all the cloudiness and the cooler water and everything's starting to get hot. And it's starting to get harder to catch fish. Today was definitely one of those telltale signs of like getting up early, getting started early, and getting done early.
Yeah.
Because it's hot and you get wore out, and the results are definitely not as good. But yeah, it's just grinding it out. And
so going into like the summer, like, do you still catch fish on like those crazy hot days? I mean, you just have to get up earlier to do it?
Definitely earlier. I've noticed, like, even Echo, like when I fished Echo, because it was so close to home, and you know, it's got big fish in it and you can catch them, but like me and my dad would go out there and we would get out there at like 5 in the morning. We get out there like 2 hours before the sun comes up
when it's like 85 degrees.
Yeah, when it's cool. And we would catch fish in the dark. We would catch fish till about 7 or 8 o'clock, and then it would just die. Like, they would just stop biting. And like, it's what's funny about that is we would be out there and we'd be getting ready to leave, and other people would just be showing up to fish. And I'm like, man, they don't even know what they just missed out on.
Wow.
Because the fish are like, I'm sure they'll catch one or two, or they'll pick some off. It could be a good day and they catch them into the afternoon. But it's nothing like that early morning bite.
It just turned off.
Yeah.
Kind of going into, like, I was going to ask you what your favorite time of day to fish is. But, I mean, because I've caught a lot of fish, like, right before sunset, too. And I know a lot. One guy that swears by, oh yeah, right before the sun goes down, like, you're going to catch the most fish you've ever caught. But I still think the morning bite is definitely where it's at, too.
The morning's definitely fire. If you get up super early, you're going to catch some of your biggest and best fish between 6 and probably 7, 8 o'clock in the morning.
Wow.
That being said, I have friends that like night fish. They'll night fish Marine Creek, and some of them have caught, like, multiple double digits out of their night fishing.
Wow.
So, I mean, like, I kind of believe that bass, they're kind of like a nocturnal feeder. Like, they'll eat. Mm-hmm. I think they kind of come to life at night. As soon as the sun goes down, that's kind of when they really come to life. And we just kind of, fishing during the day, we just kind of get like a little bit of that on a good day.
Yeah, just a slice of that. But I mean, it's also different, like you're saying, by species. Like catfish, some of the best catfishing you can do is at night.
Yeah. Oh yeah, catfish are actually wired to feed at night. Like, they're completely nocturnal. But yeah, you won't really even catch catfish during the day.
No, not really. I mean, I've caught a few during the day, but it was like a mistake.
Yeah. <You know? laughs> I've caught giant flatheads out of the river in the daytime. I mean, they came right up and ate a crankbait and just glued themselves to the bottom. Yeah, it's nuts. It's big catfish are incredibly hard to get up, by the way. They will lock themselves down to the bottom. And then I like, this one in particular, I caught on a crankbait down by, kind of by Martin House.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, below the spillway there. I was on my kayak. I'd paddled from Beach Street all the way up. And I was just throwing a little square bill crankbait. And I had something pick it up and just, like, disappeared down in the river. And I don't know if they, like, locked their fins down on the bottom or what. But, I mean, he was glued to the bottom. And I just let some line out. He kind of started moving around. I kind of feel it just wiggling a little bit, and I put pressure back on him and got him off the bottom and got him in. I think it was like 8 pounds or something. It wasn't giant, but they're a feat to get in.
Speaking
for
of,
sure,
man. Speaking of catfish and TikTok, have you seen that one? It's like, tell me you're dumb without telling me you're dumb. And this guy, like, has a catfish on the line. He flips it and he hits his guy who's not, his buddy's not wearing a shirt. So he turns to the side and he just hits him in the back with the catfish, and the spine, like, sticks him.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It, like, stabs him.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it's so horrible.
Yeah, their spines are, like, serious, especially on the big ones. Like, all these people that, like, noodle those things up off the bottom. Like,
yeah.
You watched any of those?
Yeah. Well, so that goes back to the snapping turtle thing. Like, I would, my buddy Jesse's always like, hey, let's go to Oklahoma, let's go noodling. I'm like, no, I'm not going to do that, man. I don't want to stick my hand in a hole and hope that it's not a snapping turtle in there.
Yeah, you gotta look up. There's a chick I follow on TikTok. Her name's Hannah Barron. And, like, the most petite little brunette. I don't know where she's from. Maybe Louisiana or something. But she has, like, a super, super heavy accent. And she, like, dunks down in. They have boxes. So they have, like, catfish. Wherever she's from, they have, like, so many catfish that they'll actually put, like, bait boxes down there that they can live in. And they just go down inside their own box that they know is sunken down there, and they let them, like, latch onto their legs and
yeah,
whatever. They gill them, come up with them.
Yeah, they pull them out like they got the fish swallowed their whole arm up to like the elbow.
Oh, yeah. That's I watched crazy. One of hers just like yesterday. She had two giant bite marks on her leg, and she was like, this was the mama and this was the daddy, and they both bit me. I mean, the bite marks were huge.
Nope.
Yeah. I don't know. Something about that, when they do it, it's always the dirtiest water. You can't see what's down there. You probably come up with like missing a finger because you got it bit off by a snapping turtle. Like, I don't know. It freaks me out.
You seen the ones on the Red River? It's all that like dirty, like just mud water? The Red River is
like a whole nother story. Yeah, you can't see 2 inches into that dirty water.
No, like you're saying, it's all clay. It's just straight mud and silt. And
yeah, I tried to fish the Red River one time on my kayak. There was too much current. And then it was like the dirtiest water I think I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Didn't do well.
So, on the topic of eating fish, do you, I mean, I know that you usually would prefer to catch and release since you're a bass fisherman, but do you ever decide to keep fish to eat?
I will definitely get down on some striper,
yeah,
sand bass, and crappie.
Man.
Oh, as well as catfish. Like, I love to eat catfish. So you can't go wrong with that. That's like some of the best eating fish.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'll definitely, I think out of everything you catch fresh water, I think crappie is probably where it's at. And I have some friends that are like getting pretty heavy into crappie fishing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, maybe some of my videos upcoming, maybe we'll do some crappie fishing and see what that's all about.
Man, I could tell you a few things, not because I've done it, but it's because of the stories, again, from crappie fishermen, guys I met in the Islet Academy or just from old Gary Biddy. He used to have, I guess him and his friends, they rented a boat slip on at the Eagle Mountain Yacht Club.
Okay.
And they didn't own a yacht. They didn't have a boat at all. They just rented a slip. And I guess the yacht club didn't care as long as they paid for the slip. But they would go out there and on the end of their slip, they would just fish crappie.
That's awesome.
And so I would...
That's genius, really.
Oh, yeah. And Gary would come in the mornings because I would work from 5 a.m. to 2 p.m. And Gary would get there in the mornings at 5 and he said, yep, caught 24 this morning. That's or whatever awesome. It is. I'm like, dude, you almost limited out.
Yeah, heck yeah.
And he would always tell me, he said, these aren't just those little crappie. These are barn door crappie.
That's nice. Yeah, because I know, like, around here, it's hard to find, like, really big crappie. I know, mm-hmm. like, Benbrook has some really big ones. Of course, yeah. Like, I bass fish. Like, I accidentally caught one time paddling out of Holiday.
Uh-huh.
When the lake's down, there's, like, kind of, like, they're almost like PVC pipes coming up out of the water. I think it's just, like, a guide so you don't hit stumps.
Right.
But, like, there was a stump. Like, a lake was down so much that you could see an exposed stump. And I just was throwing, like, I think it was, like, a white and chartreuse chatterbait. I threw it past the stump. And I'm just reeling it in. And I thought I caught a bass off of it. I reel it in. It was, like, a 16-inch crappie.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Giant. Yeah. Man. I mean, just the whole bait in his mouth. And I was like, oh, my God. And we've actually gotten, you've probably seen him at Academy, the submergible lights you mm-hmm. can buy, the green
yeah.
lights. We went out there one time I've ever done this, but I was like, there's got to be more crappie in those trees. So we got one of those submergible lights, paddled out there, dropped the light down, you know, in the tree, and then just like minnow fished down mm-hmm. in the tree branches. And we caught not a lot. No, definitely not a limit. I think we caught like maybe 6 or 7.
Yeah.
And we kept them. But that was kind of fun. That's I'd like to do that time. Again.
Man, one time at Benbrook on the other side of the lake near Rocky Creek, I guess it was just like the perfect day. And one of my buddies, Dennis, he took me out on, he had this little fishing ski boat. And we went up into, kind of in the sticks, like in, I call it that, but it's like all the little cattails and reeds and things that stick out on the end. And it was just after the crappie had spawned.
Yeah.
And Dennis taught me to fish. He said, you know, this is how you do crappie. And we just used the little jigs, let out like maybe 2 feet of line and just bobbed it right off the bottom.
Really?
And that day, I think I probably caught at least 15 or 16 crappie.
Nice.
And it was crazy. I mean, like, we were throwing them back because, like, some of them were too under, small for the limit.
Yeah, but, like 10, right? 10
yeah.
inches is the limit on crappie.
Yeah. So, I mean, I got to take home a good 8 crappie.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I really want to do it more. I've tried to do it, like, just jig form with little crappie jigs at Lake Worth.
Yep.
Like, on the pylons under the bridges and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird because the first time I ever actually tried to do that out there, I ended up catching more little bass than I did crappie.
Weird.
Yeah, but
it's because the bass know. They know you're there.
I'd like to just learn it, you know. Like I said, I got a friend that does it like right around here, so like it won't be long, and we'll take you out and we'll do some crappie
fishing. Yeah, there you go. Yeah, I'll tell you what Gary knows, because he knows way more than I do, but he told me about, like, I guess the lighter the jig head, the better it is.
And really?
Which is so counterintuitive to me, because you'd think the bigger the jig head, the bigger the fish, right?
Yeah, you would think that.
But crappie are wired different somehow, and you jig them vertically, just straight up and down in the water column, and for whatever reason, like, you can just leave that same, in the same spot. If they're not in that little water column, you move it to another spot, and just
right up and down.
Right up and down. There's these slip corks that they use, like with a bobber on it, and you can throw it out there, and the slip cork will let it go as far as where that knot is.
Whatever depth you're at. Mm-hmm. You know, I just did that for the first time, the whole slip cork thing, like 2 weeks ago at the little HOA pond by my house. I only did it because, like, I have super light line on a couple of my rods, and I just wanted to have fun, and the pond is little. Like, it's little bitty. It's like, I don't know. You could cast across it. But I did the little slip thing with like the tiny little pill-sized bobber, and we caught, I've seen giant catfish in there. I say giant, like 16, 18-inch catfish. I've seen them just like swirling around. I thought for sure we'd catch one, because this pond isn't very deep. You can cast the other side of it, and we did not catch one catfish, but we did the whole little slip bobber. We caught like a ton of perch.
Yeah, that's an old school method, man. But you know, some of that old school stuff, those guys have been doing it.
It works, man.
They know.
Definitely does.
Man, I think it's great too, like to talk to older fishermen. That's what, like I said, one thing I loved about being at Academy was talking to some of those old guys, the guys who've been fishing for generations, and you know, they're there with their son, or they're there with their grandpa, and get to learn some of those tricks of the trade, or you know.
Oh yeah.
And everybody's got their own go-to lure. I mean, it's crazy because they're. So I used to do the inventory at Academy.
Okay.
For the lures, so every year. And you know how many thousands of thousands of lures there are in there, but we would go in there and we'd pull all the lures off a peg and count, you know, however many there was, and then write it down on a count. And so we'd do that every year to find out, you know, what their stock levels are versus what it's supposed to be.
So you kind of get an idea of like what's selling, right?
Yeah, so you find out what's selling, and then also, I mean, really, and make sure that things are in the right product, like in the right spot. So you don't have the quarter ounce ones where the eighth ounce ones go, and you know, all that
people
stuff.
People are shuffling that stuff around. All I actually have done some of your inventory.
Yeah,
I know you have. It bothers me.
Yeah,
I'm like, this isn't where it's supposed to be. I'm putting all the hooks in the right spots. And
stuff. These are Gamagatsus. They don't belong over here at Strike King.
Yeah.
Oh gosh. Yeah, and I got to learn all the brands and about what we call the big fishing conglomerate. There's like, I forget the name of the company now, but there's a company that owns like half of all of the. I forget the name of the company, but they own like all of the major fishing companies, the Berkley and Strike King and all the ones that we know. They're owned by, I think it's Jarden Corporation.
Really?
They own everything. And so we always call them the evil fishing empire. Because
it's just a new name on the same brand.
Maybe they don't own it all, but they distributed it all
to
Academy at least. Okay. So we always call it the evil fishing corporation because they have everything, a monopoly on everything. But yeah, I mean, I don't even know where I was going with that, but really it was like by getting to go through all that inventory stuff and see, and you know, my old boss used to be a touch every peg, you know, let's find everything on here.
Yeah.
By doing that, I would get to learn about all the different lures and all the different kinds of baits, and you could ask anybody that come down the aisle, what's your favorite, and that's what I used to do, what's your favorite fishing lure, you know, how does it work, well, what do you do, where do you catch them, you know. What do you do if you know?
Just picking their brains. Uh-huh. I've always told myself you can always learn at least one important thing from everyone.
Oh yeah.
And like that's exactly what you're doing. You're like you want to know that one, just one thing. If you can take one thing away from one person, you can carry that with you the next time you go out.
And then you get to, I mean, just with anything else, and you get to decide which information is pertinent to you. Like,
absolutely. Like, you can put your twist on it.
Uh-huh. Yeah, or like, okay, well, I tried what he said, and that was bull crap. That didn't work.
It didn't work at all.
Yeah. But like you said, it's situational. It could be, maybe I take that same method that they told me about that didn't do anything for me here locally, I go somewhere else, and it works.
Yeah, yeah. You probably heard some of the best stories, because I frequent Academy, I don't know, once every week or two, pretty regularly.
Yeah.
Sometimes more.
Yeah.
But I was in there one day, and this was a long time ago, and I remember I had maybe fished Marine Creek a couple times or whatever, and he was I overheard the conversation. He was talking to probably the guy you're talking about that mm-hmm. runs behind the counter.
Mm-hmm.
And there was another older guy, and he was like, yeah, I was out on Marine Creek. He was like, I must have caught 100 crappie off of that ramp. And I was like, crappie off the ramp? Because, you know, there's a little wakeboard ramp.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess it's loaded with crappie. And I've paddled over it and, like, scanned the area just to see if there's any. I never see anything down there, but he obviously knows something I don't know.
I don't know, man. Gosh.
The stories, yeah. You probably heard a lot of good, juicy stories working at Academy, I can imagine.
Oh, man, I forgot more wonderful stories. I mean, you know, fishermen tell stories, first of all.
Yeah.
And not all of them are true, especially the older you get. Some of these guys, you know, they remember it being a massive fish and it was really not that big or whatever it was. Which I think is part of the history and, like, the culture of fishing anyways is you get to do something cool. Like, you want to tell everybody about it. And really, even though that there are so many people that will string you along, but I try to take a little bit of out of everybody who I learned from or who told me something, like, okay, maybe this is true, maybe it wasn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the great thing about it, though. There's no wrong way to fish. Like, it's always evolving and changing, and that's kind of what I like about it. I like learning new ways to do it.
Mm-hmm. One other thing I liked about just watching the lure industry go through Academy was that every year they pay homage to, like, trends. So, like, whoever won, like, the Bassmaster Classic or whatever it was, like, that's kind of like the Super Bowl of fishing.
Yeah.
Every year. Actually, I think there's one coming up pretty soon.
The Pacemaker Jig.
Yeah.
Like, when Cliff Pace won the whatever that was, the Classic or the Bassmaster, it was Pacemaker jigs all over the wall.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, so whatever they win it on, usually, and, you know, these guys will try anything to catch a fish. Like, okay, I'll do this, or I'll cut off, from this worm, I'll cut off 3 rings instead of 4, and it'll make a difference.
I guess it does,
you know, but it's interesting to see kind of that competitiveness, but also it's still in good fun. I mean, those guys make probably, like, a lot of money fishing.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah, they work for it, though.
Have you ever thought about trying to do, like, tournaments and you know, maybe go pro or something?
So we've done before, like, I don't know if you even know, but, like, there's a lot of, like, big tournaments on the Trinity and, like, some of the surrounding lakes. And a guy we bumped into, actually, fishing the river, his name was Josh Sneed. He fished the river pretty heavily, and he had done it for years, and he had a bunch of work friends, like, I think it was like 5 or 6 dudes, and he was like, he bumped into me, Nathan, and my dad out on the river one day, and we're all paddling back, getting ready to get off the water, and he's like, hey guys, he's like, what are y'all doing? And, like, kind of started just chatting it up with us, and he's like, we do a little just kind of like a friendly tournament thing out here on the Trinity, if y'all are interested.
All right, so you were telling me about you went in with.
So I think it was the tournament stuff.
Yep.
Yeah, so, like, some of the bigger tournaments. So, like, the Taylor, he used to host the Trinity Bass Battle. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of like just a. The dude was, like, super good at reaching out to, like, sponsors and getting us, like, really awesome prizes and just stuff like that. He made it really fun. So, like, it kind of got, like, a gathering behind it. So big that to where, like, at the end of the year when we did our, like, overall points, it started, they got in with some of the bigger groups. And my buddy Nathan actually, I think, finished overall. He was like first or second. I think he was like first place overall points.
Wow.
And he qualified for the TOC, which is like the Tournament of Champions. It's like one of the biggest kayak tournaments there is. And like he qualified for it for fishing the Trinity River. Like on the weekends. Like, yeah, it's crazy. Anyways, it was on some crazy lake. I can't remember where it was at, but it was a pretty far drive. And I think he had like his kid and like there was no way he could make it. So the next guy, I think his name was actually Cameron, he ended up taking the place and driving down and fishing it. I don't think he placed or anything, but yeah, it's just crazy. Like the river, that was all just from like a little get together tournament thing that like, yeah, that started on the Trinity. They still do it, but it's not quite as good as it used to be.
Yeah. What kind of prizes did they have that was getting like all those people out there?
Oh man, he was reaching out to like guys that were making swim baits, and then there were guys that were hand making jig packs. Like they were giving away jigs and just like all kinds of cool stuff. Like
yeah,
he had tumblers. Backwoods was part of it, if you know Backwoods, and yep. they would give us tumblers and gift cards, and they got another. Company in North Richland Hills, Anglers Pro Tackle, was doing gift cards and just a lot of cool stuff, man. Like, just for placing, you would get cool prizes. You get second or third, and then they would raffle. They would do raffles after that, so you didn't even have to catch a fish, and you could win a prize. Like, yeah, just everything about it was really cool, and it just, like, it really got, like, the community involved and just got people out there, you know, catching fish.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Speaking of like gear and things like that, like how much of your fishing is in the preparation? So like maintaining your rods and reels and your boats and stuff. I mean, I know aside from catching fish, you've spent it a lot of time working on all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and actually, so working on rods and reels, you said that. I actually do that on the side. I'm kind of like thinking about getting away from that because I'm kind of underselling myself because I was just doing it on the side for like in my spare time. And there's a place out in Dallas right by where I work. It's called Southwestern Reel Repair. Mm-hmm. So they get like super backed up. I only go in there because they have tackle. They have a little bit of tackle, and they also do like trade-in. So you can buy like, if you were to take like an old rod up there, they would give you, I don't know what they'd give you, like a quarter of what it's worth, and they'll sell it for like half of what it's worth. So you get like a high-end rod for like half price.
Nice.
So I'll always stop in there and just see what they have and stuff. But like I got to talking to him one day, and I was talking to him like, hey, like I buy parts from them because I fix other people's reels and some of my own. And I was like, what do y'all charge like to work on reels? And they were like, oh, it's like $25. But then like, you know, once we start taking parts out, it's like another dollar a part or something. It's something crazy. So it adds up like way quick, like yeah. almost not even worth paying to have your reels clean.
Because those are intricate. They've got a lot of parts.
And I was like, okay, so like y'all's base price just to like start working on a reel is $25. I was like, I'll charge 20.
Yeah.
Like that's reasonable. But like taking the reels apart, it takes a lot of time. Like you're looking at like, I'm pretty intricate and I take almost everything apart. Like I'll break them down to almost the bare frame and put them back together.
Yeah.
Oil the bearings, flush the bearings, grease all the gears. It may take me like an hour and a half. Like I'm making $20 off of it. Like it's really not worth it. And like I have one guy that he'll drop me like 11 or 12 reels towards like November, towards the end of the fishing season for him.
He just wants them all clean.
And he's like, hey man, I got like, if I give you like more reels, can you give me like a discount? I'm like, discount? Like, I was like, dude, I'll make it like a little bit cheaper, but that's not how it works. Like,
yeah, this is more work.
Yeah, it's more work, and like, this is all my time. Like, it doesn't really work that way, but yeah. Yeah, I've had that happen. But yeah, I service my own reels. I probably need to service some of mine now, but I would usually do it a couple of times a season, probably. Just break the reels down and clean them, and I fish with so many now. I usually take like 7 or 8. Rods and reels with me every time I go.
Oh wow, that's a,
so yeah. 7 or 8 get used regularly.
So you've got them dedicated, like on those reels, you've got them for each kind of bait,
kind of like each kind of action.
Oh wow,
yeah, bait, same thing, yeah, because right. a bait requires a certain kind of action. So I've got like, and if you think about it that way, if I go out and I like today, I made one lap around a fairly large body of water. And I had everything already rigged and ready to go. So, like, if something wasn't working, I get, like, a quarter of the way around, I can just grab another rod and keep fishing. I'm not wasting a lot of time, like, cutting and tying and
retying.
Unless I'm trying, like, a new color, whatever, you know what I mean? But, yeah, it actually, in the long run, it saves you a lot of time doing it that way.
Yeah, so, like, on the back end doing all that stuff, how much time do you spend looking at things like the weather or like the spawning patterns of fish? Like,
I'm basically a weatherman.
Yeah. Postman, the weatherman.
Yeah, I'm looking at next week's weather like at the end of my weekend. Like, yeah, I look at the weather quite often. Actually, to go a little more into that, I use the Weather Channel app. Primarily because they do an hourly update. So like, you can literally break the day down within the hour, so I'll know like what part of the day it's going to be the windiest, or if there's clouds blowing in. I know exactly, well, I say exactly, no weatherman's perfect, but they're pretty dead on. Like, yeah. I usually know what to expect using The Weather Channel app. Yeah, it's a very, very good tool.
Yeah. Do you ever look at things like the Farmer's Almanac or whatever? I know that like a lot of people swear by it. They're like,
some people do, and like I don't really. Yeah, because you can go into a lot of different things like moon phase and like barometric pressure and all that. And I do believe like it does factor in, you know, just it affects us and you probably don't even know it.
Yeah.
You know, barometric pressure and storms blowing in and the way it makes you feel and, mm-hmm. you know, all that kind of stuff. But I think the biggest thing to take from all that or that I do is probably out of all those aspects is going to be moon phase.
Yeah.
And I don't really pay that close attention to it, but I think if like you were to go off of a moon phase and actually, let's just say you're going to fish at night, you're going to try to fish at night some night. I think if you were to fish a full moon night and just solidly fish through the night on a night like that, I do believe you would do like way better than any other night or day.
Yeah.
And
because they can see it maybe.
Exactly. Why? Yeah.
Wow.
Because they already hunt. They already can hunt at night, and then on a full moon, they can see everything twice as better. So yeah, I think that's absolutely true. Barometric pressure. I think I've literally been fishing, and a storm had blown in. That's like a heavy storm that had like hail, and it, for whatever reason, maybe it was the weather, maybe not, but like they just started biting like out of nowhere. It was like every cast. Yep. We were catching them out of the river, and then we were watching the storm clouds blow in. We ran up to the car. We were driving back from Beach Street, and it literally was like hailing.
Wow.
Yeah.
Because the pressure dropped
a little bit. I guess that's what it was. I don't know. My buddy Nathan that was with me, he was like, dude, that was crazy. Like, we just like were on fire there for like 30 minutes, and we had to leave because we were about to get hailed on.
Yeah. But like you're saying, I mean, back to the academy thing, like there was one guy that used to come in, and he used to always tell me that during the rain is like his favorite time to fish, because he would, for whatever reason, catch more or whatever in the rain. He says, you know, I mean, the fish are already wet. They're already underwater, so it doesn't matter to them.
No, yeah, I don't think it matters at all to them, but I do think there is like a pressure drop and like when storms and rain and all that kind of blows in. Like, I've had really good days in the rain as well. Bank fishing.
Yeah.
You know, if it's raining, I had good days actually the past couple weeks when storms have blown in and it's been raining. I freaking caught the first smallmouth, the second smallmouth I've ever caught at a Wheeler Branch. It was like 2 pounds, 10 ounce, or I'm sorry, 3 pounds, 10 ounces. And then I caught one the day I went to a different lake, and then that Saturday I went back out there and I caught one that was 320, and it was like stormy rainy days. Like, I don't know what it was about it, but like I do have good luck on rainy days. I would say that's probably something about that is probably true.
So to kind of wrap it all up, I was going to ask you, is there anything else that that fishing has taught you about life?
I would say if you were to take anything from this conversation we've had, I would say just get outside and go explore. Like, that is why I do it. Yeah. I like to get outside. I like to explore. I like to see new things. I mean, I'm all about that kind of stuff, though. You know, a lot of this generation, you know, you get a lot of kids, I've noticed. Like, now that I'm 36 years old, I have friends that have kids that, you know, 15, 13, and they're all like into video games. They don't go outside, and like, there's nothing wrong with video games, don't get me wrong, but like, I was the complete opposite growing up. You know, I was running around outside catching lizards and just doing all that, and like, that's just kind of who I am. But that is what I would take from this, like, get outside and explore.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, Chris, thank you so much for your time and being here, man. It's been great to see you and to talk about fishing. We could talk about this all night. Absolutely. I love hanging out and talking about fish, and hopefully we'll get to go fish again here pretty soon. And to the listener, if you want to seek out how to catch more fish and you enjoy learning, check out Chris Perez on Instagram at CinnamonCrunchDust84 and on TikTok at @InsomniYaks.
And until next time, I'm your host, Josh Morgan, on the Seek and Enjoy podcast. Find what makes you happy.